This is the Quality News Network. The Palestinian territories are on the precipice of civil war. Attacks today against the office of the President and Prime Minister, as well as Fatah security headquarters. At least 14 Palestinians were killed yesterday, 630 since Hamas took power in 2006. President Bush meets with Senate Republicans in a few hours in a lobbying attempt to change their minds on his controversial immigration bill. The legislation faced stiff conservative opposition when Republicans blocked its movement on the Senate floor last week. In a remote checkpoint in eastern Afghanistan, a friendly fire incident this morning between U.S. and Afghani security forces killed 7 Afghan police and wounded another 3. In the dark, police mistook a U.S. convoy for Taliban and opened fire. American troops fired back and ordered air support. There were no U.S. injuries. In Iraq, the third major attack on a significant transportation corridor in as many days. This morning, insurgents bombed a bridge 35 miles south of Baghdad, disabling about 60% of the span. There were no injuries. In Tehran, Iranian officials say a judge will decide next week whether to indict 3 American Iranians or free them. The 3 were arrested and charged with fomenting revolution. Another American was released on bail, awaiting trial. A prosecutor in the Nuremberg Nazi war crimes trial says Guantanamo Bay is disloyal to the American sense of judicial fairness. 88-year-old Henry King says the 380 prisoners in Guantanamo should be tried in federal courts or through the court-martial system. In Lebanon, 2 local Red Cross workers and 3 soldiers were killed yesterday, the most recent casualties in the 3-week siege of a Palestinian refugee camp. Lebanese forces are trying to dislodge non-Palestinian Islamic militants holed up in the camp. In The Hague, a paramilitary Serb leader was sentenced today to 35 years in prison for murdering and torturing hundreds of Croats during the 4-year ethnic cleansing campaign in the Krajina region. He was also convicted of cluster bombing Croatia's capital city, Zagreb. In the Niger Delta, Nigerian rebels released a dozen foreign hostages today, including 5 Americans. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Stay tuned. Science and business are next.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now, in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. Or, for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission, Mary Knoll.
NASA says problems with the damaged thermal blanket on the space shuttle Atlantis will mean the astronauts' mission will be extended by 48 hours. The blanket was peeled back during the shuttle's launch Friday. A landmark study suggests the current process of logging and replanting forests following fires is wrong. The new trees reseeded in burned areas actually makes the situation worse for as long as 20 years after a fire. The Associated Press reports the CEO of private equity firm Blackstone made $400 million last year. That's almost double what the top executives made from Wall Street's 5 largest investment banks combined. When Blackstone goes public within the next few weeks, co-founders are expected to receive more than $2.3 billion. The Bush administration has rebuffed the SEC's recommendation to permit shareholders to sue leading Wall Street banks involved in Enron's collapse. That places the White House in opposition to rulings from dozens of states and consumer advocacy groups. Forbes magazine reports CEOs and airline pilots are only non-medical professions in the list of the top 15 highest-paid U.S. jobs. America's lowest-paying work can be found with employment at fast food and moderately priced restaurants. You're listening to the Quality News Network. I'm Annabelle Lund.
from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right, everybody, wake the hell up. It's time for the show. Move it. Wake up. Out of bed. Come on. 1, 2, 1, 2. Get up. You can't have you lazing around here all day, can you? What's wrong with you? Why can't you be like your brother? He was up 6 hours ago working in the fields. We don't even have fields, and he was working. How's everybody doing today? It is a Tuesday here in Chicago, and pretty much everywhere around the world, unless you're in Australia. What the heck? Was it still Monday, or is it Wednesday or so in Australia? I have no idea. I don't know. I don't keep track of this crap. How is everybody doing? Again, it's Tuesday. Tuesday named after the god of war. A lot of people don't know that. Tuesday is named after Tiu, T-I-E-U, the Norse god of war. 4 of our 7 days of the week are named after Norse gods. A lot of people don't know that. But now you do. How's everybody doing today? I'm just, it's such a day outside. And I just got back from work. I work 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. For those of you who don't listen to the show regularly and don't know who I am, I'm Joe Vecchio. And when I say I'm the voice of the working man, thinking man, I am not kidding. I am a working man. I go out and I work every evening. I work from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. Monday through Friday. And that means I start Monday at 11 p.m., not Sunday at 11 p.m. And work through Friday. So. And that schedule is a real pain in the ass. I gotta tell you, the schedule is a real pain in the ass. But anyway, welcome to my show. And I try to do this every day, as much as possible, when not interrupted by having to work late or just technical issues or just, you know, I don't feel like doing the damn show. It's not like I make a living doing this, you know. What was it? Tom Lehrer was saying, singing, you know, and he was singing, he was talking about it. It's not like I have to do this for a living when I could be making, $3,000 a year just teaching. That was back in the 50s, so $3,000 meant a little more than it does now, but still. It is a beautiful day out. It is wonderfully sunny. And when I wake up after I finish the show, once I get some sleep and wake up, I probably would and should go out in the sun. But, you know, I'm not really an outdoor person. I'm very much an indoor kind of guy. So, but I work in the evenings, and I wouldn't mind it so much. And really, 11 to 7 really kind of sucks for me. And I would rather work my 3 to 11 shifts. But the reason I stopped doing that is because I had to get away from there because we had a really, really bad manager. And I could not deal with her, and she could not deal with me. So it was in everybody's best interest that I change shift, which is kind of stupid because I was on that shift first. And we were talking tonight in the shop last night when I was working about, you know, what makes a good manager and what makes a bad manager, and what makes a good supervisor and what makes a bad supervisor. And you know, realistically speaking, a supervisor has to be a little bit detached from the workers. I mean, you can be friendly with them, you can be chummy with them to a certain extent, but a good supervisor cannot be a worker. And the thing I have with this, the supervisor I'm having trouble with it, is that this person is a worker with authority, not a real supervisor. And as I explained to the overall supervisor at a meeting about the issues that we had, my current supervisor is very, very good. She does have that sense of detachment, but she is friendly enough so that you can, you know, talk to her and get along with her. And since it's a late shift, there's not a whole lot of you know, pressure from above, as there is on the first shift when everybody's there. But what makes a good manager? What makes a good supervisor? I've had good and bad over the years. I have had really, really awful supervisors. I had get people that like to listen to the Right Wing Radio every single day. And I couldn't handle that. I got so pissed off at those. I've left jobs because they were listening to that garbage. Okay, I've walked away from jobs. In the middle of shifts, I've walked away. I've had supervisors who were just idiots. Idiots. We had a couple over at Siemens who were just they didn't know a damn thing about the job at all. Why were they there? Why were they in the position they were in? Because they knew how to push people around. And management was looking for people who would do that. And I have had some really, really good managers. And if I can say so myself, the one time where I got to be a manager, be a supervisor, I did a pretty damn good job. Thank you very much. Because unlike a lot of managers, I understood that an important function of the manager is not to micromanage, not to get in there and be on everybody's case all the time, is to make sure that the people who work for you have the tools they need to do their job, and that they understand what their job is, and that you understand what your place is in that aspect, and they understand that too. In other words, everybody knows where their responsibilities lie. And when that happens, you can have a pretty good workplace. But I've noticed a lot of different workplaces, a lot of people are just plain miserable. Because you have supervisors who either don't know or don't care. They've got their job. They're making big money, or at least bigger money than the working people are making. And they're fairly safe from being fired. And everybody else is just kind of struggling along. And it's not a good work situation for a lot of people in this country. And those are the good jobs. And then the jobs that some of them that do pay a lot of money, you're under a lot more pressure because you're expected to do certain things, especially if you're in the sales and industry isn't the right word. I'm trying to think of the right word. But especially if you're in sales. And for those of us who don't have a college education, if you want to make serious amounts of money in this country, sales is the way to go because you don't need a college education to be in sales. But I'm sure you all, you know, I'm not telling you anything you all don't know. I mean, I'm sure you all work in jobs where you have, I'm sure there are those of you out there who have really good supervisors and those of you out there have really bad supervisors. And the really bad supervisors, they're bad in so many different ways and in so many aspects of what they do that it's hard to name them all. But mainly, there's a sense of, the worst ones that I've seen are the ones that just, you know, they've got the authority and they love to abuse it. And that's the worst of the lot. If you've got a supervisor story, I used to call one back in the show when I was used to doing non-live, when I used to do pre-recorded stuff, I asked people to call in and do stupid boss tricks. If you've got a stupid boss trick, something particularly stupid that your boss has done, and you don't have to give me a name, you don't have to give me a company, you can protect your anonymity, not that your boss is liable to be listening to this show anyway, but if you've got a stupid boss trick, give me a call. And talk to me about it. I've got a lot of stuff going on today, but if you want to give a call, you can do so. The number to call in while we head out for our first break, the number to call in is 1-304-658-5453, 1-304-658-5453, or the toll-free number, which is 1-877-443-2366, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. surprise.
Head on radionetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at headonradionetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
This is the Head On Radio Network. The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Do you remember the Kellogg's Rice Krispies jingle?
Snap, what a happy sound. Snap is the happiest sound I've found. You may clap, rap, clap, clap, but snap makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, Rice Krispies.
Well, this week on Foxed Up, you will be surprised to know just who composed that jingle and the band who recorded it. So join us this Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern with John Fox on Foxed Up. Right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Pops the sound, the best is missed unless Pops around.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here is some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Okay, and we're back here on the Cup of Joe radio show. Once again, your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. So far today, I'm talking about supervisors, good and bad. And let's get someone on the line here to talk about it. Let's get our good friend Bob Kincaid, who is running the board, and to talk about this issue. Because this is something that... this is something that's near and dear to everybody. Hi, Bob. You there?
Yeah, I'm right here, Joe. How
good,
you doing?
Good. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Good. Now, you brought this issue up, and it was something I touched on briefly last night during the show. I was reading the 300 and some odd pages of letters to Judge Reggie Walton in regard to the sentencing of Scooter Libby.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
we love you, Libby.
Oh, if it says Libby, 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 you know. But there was a letter in there, and it was signed not just by Mary Madeline, who is a right-wing thug, but it was signed by James Carville, her husband as well, begging for leniency for Scooter. And she says explicitly in the letter that, you know, my husband doesn't share his political views, but he signs off on this as well. And there's a passage in the letter, and I think it goes to the heart of what you're talking about. She says, setting aside the pain of the Libby family, my girls just don't understand. They're old enough to intellectually comprehend the facts of the case, but associating these facts with the man they call Mr. Scooter remains a complete disconnect to them. And that actually has to do with what you're talking about, Joe.
Yeah.
Because... we get up, working America gets up and goes to work and does stuff that they would not be proud to tell their children about. And maybe that's the real benchmark standard. Maybe that's the standard we need to go to in this country. Can I tell my kids about it? Can I be proud of what I do in front of my kids? Because, you know, if you get up and you go to work and you work at a telemarketing firm that harasses people who are late on their credit card bills, is that something you want to talk? You want to tell your kids the way you treated people on the phone all day?
Exactly.
My dad was very lucky, he said, in that he loved his work. He was a furnace operator. And he got to get up and go to work and work in that hellish heat, and he loved it. And he was, and it made a difference in the way he was, you know, around the house. If you have, you know, if it's a matter of just doing whatever it is to keep the lights on, then it's going to make a profound impact on what happens when you go through the door.
Right. And, you know, I've said this before, you know, I would rather, me personally, I would rather make $50,000 a year doing something I absolutely love than make $5 million a year doing something that made me want to slit my throat rather than to go there every day. Because, you know, the personal happiness is much more important to me, that sense of self-satisfaction. And, you know, talk about Scooter Libby, what about Alberto Gonzalez? And John Stewart made the point perfectly. So this is a guy who allowed himself to make himself look like an idiot in order to protect his boss. This is a guy who went national television and just came across like a total idiot in order to protect this guy, Mr. Bush.
Made a complete fool of himself.
Yeah, and what does that tell you about the kind of boss Mr. Bush is? It doesn't say much for him, does it?
No, it doesn't. And that's you know, there are, I'm sure there are good, kind, humane, decent supervisors and bosses out there. But
unfortunately, a lot of the really good ones wind up getting canned because the people above them want them to be, you know, harder on people.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, I'm glad you've got this subject open for discussion. Because what it means to be a working person in America is something, you know, it's almost like religion, isn't it, Joe? You know, you've got to have a job, you've got to make money, and you're not an American if you're not making a lot of money. And you know, we get, for God's sakes, we have less vacation than any other country in the industrialized world. Most working class people don't have vacations in this country.
And you know what? We do this to ourselves, Bob. I mean, I still remember that conversation I had with a guy when I was working for the audio-video installation company. I was in the break room taking my lunch, and there was a guy there filling up the soda machine, and we got to talking. And for some reason, the conversation turned to the elections. And I said, you know, Election Day ought to be a federal holiday so that people have time to go out and vote. And the guy just kind of, we have too many days off in this country anyway. And I'm looking at him and I said, what are you, friggin' kidding me? You know, and is this the attitude that working people have? You work until you die, and if you get ripped off, that even seems to be more honorable. You know, well, you know, I work for less money than you, but I work, you know, 48 hours a day at the mill, you know, and I'm proud of that. And meanwhile, the bosses are laughing at him because the bosses are doing nothing.
Exactly, and you know, I was talking with our good friend Wayne the other day, and he was talking about, you know, he grew up in a steel mill town. And you had your childhood, you got out of high school maybe you didn't finish high school, and there was a job waiting at the mill. And you worked your ass off at the mill for 20 or 30 years, and then you retired, and 2 years later you died.
Right.
That is, you know, if that's the glories of the free market, leave me the hell out of it, you know what I mean?
And, you know, I get a lot of grief from some people that I've never really found steady work. You know, Bob, the truth of the matter is most people, when they leave their work, they really leave their bosses. They're not leaving their job. They're leaving because it's an untenable situation with the supervisor or maybe even a coworker. And I've been in situations where I really just don't click with the average supervisor because I've got this kind of warped sense of humor and I've kind of got this wry, you know, is this really all that important attitude about my work. And about, actually, I'm very concerned with the work that I do, but I don't really concern myself too much with the job. I don't really play the politics. I don't care to play the politics. And that's hurt me a lot. And it hurts my self-confidence and makes me feel bad. But I always have relatives and stuff telling me, you know, well, how come you're not making more money? I'm doing very well. Why can't you just conform? Why can't you just be like this? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, whatever.
Oh, and
you know, what am I supposed to do?
If you've ever worked in one of those cubicle hills, you know, every so often you have to go to team meetings, and you have to. Oh God, I worked in a telemarketing outfit across the river here, and you know, you were supposed, yay, you know, we were gonna hustle. I'm ashamed to say this. We were gonna start hustling AOL, Joe. Mm. And there's a I have earned a special place in hell for what I convinced people to do. But you know, I'm good on the phone, so whatever. But we went through three or four. No, it was an entire week on the clock of sitting there having team meetings about how to sell the new enhanced America Online with broadband enhancements that nobody needed. And we were supposed to cheer and yay, AOL, go! And, you know, it felt a hell of a lot like prostitution.
Oh, it was awful. I mean, I've been to places when looking for work. There are places that advertise management positions, you know, management positions. And you go in there and it's like, I don't know the word to describe it, but you go in there and it's like a big, there's an auditorium filled with people and everybody's clapping and talking about. And what the management is you're selling shampoo and crap to your friends.
Yeah.
You know, a pyramid scheme type of deal. But everybody's supposed to be, well, yeah, and everybody's so phony. And I really hate that. You know, ladies come to you, well, hi, how are you? You know, and it's like, get away from me. You know, you've got slime all over you. Move. And it's filled
with people
like that.
I have a spray gun. Yeah.
I got Macy, a lady. And back off.
I've developed this kind of standard, Joe. If you're in a situation where they want you to clap and cheer, odds are you don't realize it, but you're standing in caca. You know what I mean? Because if you have to come up with phony enthusiasm for it, then you know that there's something fundamentally wrong with the product. And you know, I've done things in my life I'm not proud of. I spent a couple of years deliberately trying to screw working people, and I figure I'm still working off my penance. It's part of why I do what I do now. Mm. 2 years of my life I spent looking at disability claims, saying, nah, he's a malingerer. When the guy should have just been given his damn check and allowed to move on down the road. But you see, we're polluted with these things in this state, Joe, called coal companies. And a coal company on a workers' comp claim, you know, and I was just doing file review, okay? I was just looking at it, and our job was to make sure the dude did not get his money. And I was doing this so I could have money. And after a while, you just kind of have to, you know, take a seat under the old maple tree and chew on a twig and say, what in the hell am I doing?
And what kind of world do we live in that, you know, that people have to do this? And you know, the people who run those businesses, it's just like, you know, Michael Moore's got his movie Sicko coming out. There are people whose jobs it is to make sure that people don't get medical benefits,
yeah.
Medical coverage.
Yeah, I kind of mentioned that person last night on the program. You know, the sweet young lady who went to nursing school thinking that she was going to help people, but the pay in the hospital and the hours she had to work just sucked. And as a consequence, what she decided to do instead was to take the higher-paying job as a claims analyst inside an HMO or some godforsaken insurance company, where her job is to say, you know, 18 or 20 times a day, we don't pay.
Right. No. Job is to say no.
And that person, what's going to happen, you know, because I'm a little, you know, there's a little, some of that Christianity rubbed off on me somewhere along the way down in the basement of the Baptist church with the little old blue-haired ladies when I was five. And what are those people going to be like when they come to the end of their days? What has their life meant? Oh, I spent my life screwing people who were sick in the first place and in the most extreme positions of their lives, and I broke their hearts. Boy, they're going to welcome me at the pearly gates.
And, you know, the people who believe in that sort of thing, the people who really believe in the judgment, and I don't, you know, I'm not big on the afterlife. I'm an agnostic. I'm not a Christian. I don't know what awaits us after death. Hell, maybe nothing awaits us after death as far as I know. But if you really, really believe in that, and you believe in the idea of an all-knowing, all-seeing deity that's going to judge you after you're gone from this world, then don't you think it would behoove you to take a second look at what you're doing? Because, you know, you can hide it from me, you can hide it from your patients, you can hide it from your coworkers, maybe even you can hide it from yourself a little bit, but deep down you know what you're doing is nothing but pure evil. And you're going to have to face down a God who may or may not look kindly upon that. And that's what all these people need to take a look at.
Yeah. Oh,
you know, in their lives.
They're sitting there at the judgment. Let's see. Let's go through. Okay. Here's it. June 12th, 2007. I see that you denied pain medication to a woman who was suffering in the agonies of cancer. Do you think you're coming through these gates? I think you've got some misplaced hopes.
And of course,
the asbestos boots are over there.
That's right. And the Catholic Church just dissolved limbo, so you can't go to no purgatory. Was it limbo or purgatory?
No, limbo. Limbo. That was
they got rid of limbo.
That was for
no more limbo.
Dead unbaptized babies.
So no more of that. It doesn't work anyway. It's just arbitrary. You know, a bunch of old guys make a decision, and that's that.
But you know, in a way, what we're talking about, those choices, those moral choices, have a lot to do with organized labor, because people who are organized can stand up and say, "No, I will not. I will not spend my life doing evil to other people."
But you know, the problem is that we've been raised in a society, Bob, where people are told that you know, that sort of cooperation with working people is just wrong. That if you're not doing it yourself, if you're not a self-made person, that there's something wrong with you. And there's a lot of people who really honestly believe that and don't even want to work with their fellow workers because they see themselves in competition with their fellow workers.
Well,
and
I don't,
all the bosses and all the executives, they just love that.
And I don't know about you, but I think I'm off the grid. I won't. I mean, I've had sleepless nights over things I've done in my work life, and I'm not going to have them anymore. I've slept since we started the Head On Radio Network, Joe. I have slept better than any time in my working life.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the biggest shame of it all is that nobody's getting anything out of it. But I hope that changes. I hope that will grow.
Well, maybe the self-satisfaction is you know, worth it in the long run.
But you can't cook up a hot pot of self-satisfaction and feed hungry mouths with it.
I understand, and but you know, like I keep saying, and it's true for you, it's true for everyone here, it's true for John Fox, it's true for Peter Godmold, it's true for everybody that works here in the Head On Radio Network. We do this because we feel compelled to do this. You know, we're not like, you know, the whores of the right wing that'll go on there and, you know, yeah, sure, I'll lie about any kind of stuff, or I'll say anything to make a few million dollars a year, you know. And then what is it, what was it we just heard on the news, the Blackstone company, where the guy make $400 million?
Yeah.
$400 million in 1 year? What the hell do you do with that kind of money? What do you do with it? I have no idea. I mean, how much filet mignon can you have every single day? What, do you go out and kill a new elephant every day? You know, is that what you do?
You know, at some point, doesn't it turn into that Twilight Zone episode where the mobster goes and he's surrounded by beautiful women, and there's, you know, the
yeah.
elegantly appointed craps tables, and every time he throws, he wins, and after a while he looks up and says, you know, I'm sick of heaven. And then the little dude walks up and says, who said this was heaven?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how many new Lamborghinis, how many new Porsches, how many new McMansions can you go through and have that amount to self-satisfaction?
Right.
You know, sooner or later, we have to live inside our own skulls.
And it's just a kind of emptiness to know that you know, you've got all the money, but the money doesn't necessarily mean anything. You know, and,
I sometimes think the money is in the wrong people's hands. Because,
well, you know, if I had it, I wouldn't know what to do with it. I'd give half of it away to charity to begin with, and you know, like Robert Redford and his thing. You're going to take your share? Nah, I'd probably only blow it. You know.
Yeah.
Just give me enough to so that I can pay my rent and pay my bills and eat out, you know, every now and then, and just, you know, if I need to buy something, I can buy something and not worry about, you know, if purchasing this is going to make me late on the rent. You know, that's all I ever want. That's all I ever ask for. But I guess I'm just not good enough to get it, Bob. And that's just the way I see it right now. I will never
succumb to the idea that it's some sort of a value judgment on your quality as a human being, because I know what your qualities as a human being are, and I admire you. To say that I'm not good enough to get it, no. What you're not, it's not that you're not good enough to get it, Joe. Damn it, you're not bad enough to get it, okay? You're not ruthless enough. You're not heartless enough. You are not, because you see, the system that we live in now thrives on a certain level of sociopathic, call it capitalism. Okay, fine. Sociopathic capitalism where the drive to satisfy one's own, very low brain needs, will actually allow us to do direct harm to other people. What do you say to the people who are in church every time the door opens, but Monday through Friday are working at Northrop Grumman or some other place building laser guided bombs to drop on mud huts in Iraq? How can you look at that person, Joe, and not say, you know, you're bound for hell? Or you're bound for the limbo or whatever. You're screwing your own soul. Oh, but I'm doing it very comfortably. I've got a swimming pool. You know, did I tell you about the boat I bought? You know, as people on the left, Joe, how do we not look at these people and say that?
What I can't understand is how the people on the left who have that kind of serious money and who just simply don't understand. And, you know, they'll toss a few to maybe some consultants or something like that, or they'll give it to a particular cause, but they won't see the big picture. They figure they got theirs, and they'll throw a few dollars here and there to assuage a little guilt, perhaps, but they're really not understanding the larger issues of what's going on because, you know, they got theirs, and they're happy, and that's that. And they should be one of us. They should be among us. But I think they've lost touch with what it means to be a lower class working person in this country. You know, my dad used to say that, and he was talking about the late 80s, but it's still basically the same type of deal, that today is a lot worse than it was in the Depression. Because during the Depression, yeah, jobs were hard to find, but if you had a job, you could support yourself. Because rent was low, food was cheap, you know. Nowadays, even if you have a steady 40-hour a week job, you can't make ends meet. I mean, even when I'm making 40 hours a week, I'm barely struggling just to get the rent and pay the bills.
Yeah, it's not because the profit margin where you work is so narrow. It is because so little money is doled out to the people doing the actual work, so that the people who aren't doing the work can make the vast amount of the money. This is what we're talking about here, and I realize I verge into Godwin's law on this one by saying it, Joe, but we're talking about what Hannah Arendt was talking about when the term was coined, the banality of evil.
Mm-hmm.
There were people all over Nazi Germany who went home at the end of the day after sitting there running the Zyklon B valve at the death camp. And the people who lived around Auschwitz said, well, you know, it stunk a little at first, but after a while we got used to the smell of burning flesh. What do you mean, why didn't we complain?
And what was it? There was an article I read, was it on Consortium News or something, but it was talking about how they used to have to dust the ashes off of their vehicles or whatnot outside every single day because, you know, the ashes were falling over. And he just kind of did it without thinking about these are human beings that are falling down from the sky, but they just kind of put it out of their head, you know, because if you know, and some of them probably just felt powerless to do anything about it in the face of such enormous physical opposition, you know, because if you said anything in Nazi Germany the wrong way, remember the White Rose Society, our good friend Ben Birch running the WhiteRoseSociety.org, the original White Rose Society were just a bunch of people who wanted to communicate with others about what was going on, and when they were found out, they were killed.
Decapitated.
And when you face that kind of pressure... Yeah, and when you face that kind of pressure, you know, what choice do you have? And when you're in a situation where you could wind up like, I mean, we're not going to get decapitated, but you could wind up like me, for crying out loud, where you're struggling to get by, you come this close to being homeless, you have to rely on, you know, the friendship of others just to get by every week. Nobody wants to go through that, so they'll suffer through it, and they'll put up with it, and they'll keep their mouths shut and not do anything. Because to say anything... will hurt them. And of course, that's just the way some people like it. They want to put that pressure on everybody so that they can maintain their control.
Well,
and where does it get them in the long run? I mean, you know,
nowhere.
How happy are they? They're miserable, too, even with all the money. Look at what happened with Paris Hilton. You know, do you think she's happy? You know, with all the money and the fame she's got? She, and Britney Spears, they drove themselves nuts.
Yeah. Lindsay Lohan is so happy that she has to be outside of her own psyche by, you know, better living through chemistry. Do you remember Jules? You ever seen the Jules Pfeiffer cartoons along the way, Joe? Ran in New York.
From the Village Voice.
Yeah, sure.
From the Village Voice.
He did a play once that had a bunch of monologues in it called Hold Me, and they were basically verbal expressions of his cartooning. And there was one guy. There was one monologue in there where a guy just walks out onto an empty stage and he says, "Sometimes I feel like the king of the universe, and sometimes I'm down in the dumps. Sometimes I feel like a god, and sometimes I feel small and hurt. And sometimes I just feel like me, so I drink." And really, that's a whole bunch of America.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever read him. Mark Morford over at the San Francisco Chronicle is probably one of the best columnists going in the country today. And he had an observation in one of his columns. I was reading through his archives the other day. And he was talking about the people that he saw at one of those festival days in San Francisco. And he and his housemate had set up a little junk sale on their sidewalk trying to get rid of some, the crap that piles up in the house. And he said, and he was just watching the drunk people come down. And God knows, I'll do a 12-ounce curl with the best of them, okay? But he's talking about why people do it. Public occasions when they just get literally falling down drunk. And he comes around to this notion that we live in a society that something like that is illegal to be consumed. In large part because there's some sort of underlying societal recognition that we have to have that, or people will spontaneously combust. We have to have reality television. We have to have Katie Couric talking about Paris Hilton instead of the serious business of the Republic, because people, if they take a long look at where their nation is, will blow up, or they'll maybe do something even more dangerous and engage in revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you take any kind of a long look at what's going on here, you can't stand it. If you listen to Flimball, and I'm sorry, I've hijacked your show, Joe.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
I heard Flimball the other day saying, "My friends, I'm basically a happy guy. I try to present a happy, upbeat vision of America on my program every day. I don't have to make it up. I'm just that way. I'm an optimist. I believe in the greatness of the American dream." And that's the problem with the left. They're all gloom and doom. Well, who's reality-based here?
Well, his reality is he makes several hundred million dollars a year, or tens of millions of dollars a year, and he gets to sit behind a knight's desk, and I get a desktop that I took from an alley, and then three paper boxes and a windsill holding my computer up. That's my reality.
Yeah.
So I guess it is all a matter of perspective, And people are amazed that, look at all the stuff that I've been through over the last couple of years, Bob. Okay, I've been unemployed for a long time because my wife was sick. My wife died, and you remember she was on my show a few times. You know how much I loved her and I cared about her, and it was a huge loss for me. And I was talking to my roommate about this the other day, and I was like, look, it's a struggle sometimes just for me to wake up in the morning because I feel like I'm just, what am I doing here? What is happening? Why am I here? What purpose am I serving anymore? I used to think the only purpose I had was to make Kathy, and now she's gone. And yet I persevere every single day. Even though I don't know where I'm going, I don't know what the future holds, I just persevere. Maybe I'm just kind of waiting for something else to happen. I have no idea. But if I didn't have some sense of optimism for the future that something was going to get better, I would not only would I not be doing the show, I would have just thrown myself in the Chicago River weeks ago, ages ago.
Well, let me say one thing in regard to that, and then I'll turn the show back over to you, Joe. Jesus, I can't believe I've done this. I don't know if it'll prove any comfort, but the fact is, what you're doing right now is incredibly important to somebody. I don't know who that person is. and this is not a tent meeting, and I'm not going to say that there's a lady with hemorrhoids in Poughkeepsie that you're taking her mind off the pain. But the fact of the matter is, it's probably true. It's more likely true than not true. You've seen the emails you get from people saying, "We're listening, Joe. We're listening. You matter." Okay? Because and the reason you matter is because it matters to them to hear your truth. You change their world. And frankly, it's you, it's John, it's Guy, it's Bill, me, Mark Levine, God knows it'll be Peter Godbold. It'll be the people coming on board this little enterprise who are doing it not because they're getting $25.9 million a year. You know, you could do the Job trick on Rush Limbaugh, and God knows I wish Satan would sit down and have brunch with God and decide that they were going to do that just like they did to Job. Oh, yeah. Rush Limbaugh loves America, but what if you take away the $25.9 million? How much will he love it then?
Right.
Okay? Well, we've passed that test with flying colors, Joe, and I will take a back seat to no man, nor will I have anybody on this network take a back seat to anyone on their passion and their compassion for this country and for the people who share their time with us every day. My God, it matters. What you do, Joe, matters. And I on those days when it just feels like, you know, the damn sheet is too heavy to get off your body to crawl out of bed, I hope you can remember that, and I hope everybody who participates in this network can remember that. It matters.
Well, if I didn't think it matters, I wouldn't do it. I mean, it just goes. I mean, even the days that I feel down, I know that at least I'm trying something. You know, however significant it may wind up being in the long run, I'm not here to say. I'm not going to judge. I certainly know that I get a lot of emails. I got a lot of emails back from the I'm listening thing, and it actually made me very, very happy to read some of the things that I got because it did pick me up. And it did make me feel better. But, you know, and of course, you know, I don't want this to turn into the Sammy Maudlin show and all that.
No. I'm off my soapbox. In fact, we should probably take a break.
We should probably do that. And if anybody does want to call in and get the last licks on this.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Bob. Bob Kincaid, ladies and gentlemen, who is our owner and principal host here on the Head On Radio Network. And I'm glad that he joined in. And you know, talk to me about it. But if you want to call in, you got one last chance: 304-658-5453 or 1-877-443-2366. We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad Wally and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, the problem with the so-called professional media has just as much to do with the news they're not telling you than it does with what they do tell you. If, for example, you were to believe what you see on TV or read in the newspapers, you would think that everything is just fine in New Orleans or along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. That's why unreportednews.net is so important. It's not just keeping us informed of the tragedy that's still unfolding on the Gulf Coast, it's helping to do something about it by helping families who have had their lives and livelihoods destroyed. Not just by a terrible natural disaster, but by the callous indifference of the current administration and their wealthy allies in the news media. UnreportedNews.net is taking the initiative to keep us focused on this tragedy, but they can't do it alone. They need your help. So please go to UnreportedNews.net and give what you can, and let others know what's happening there. Because the only thing worse than an unnecessary death is an unmourned one. UnreportedNews.net, your source for real news.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Just days after the launch of the space shuttle Atlantis, the union representing United Space Alliance employees has agreed not to strike. The International Association of Machinists represents 570 space shuttle workers at the Kennedy Space Center. The union has agreed to continue negotiations after the alliance expressed a willingness to hear more from the union. The company had previously called their most recent contract offer final. Repercussions of newspapers streamlining and cutting back staff as they adjust to a changing media environment is being felt at the Baltimore Sun. 18 photographers at the paper withdrew their bylines on Monday as a protest to reporters shooting videos and photos. Company management is seeking to slash a portion of photographers' contracts that prohibits employees from working as reporters and photographers. Sun Management says the move is to increase content at the paper to meet an increasing multimedia demand. The photographers, represented by the Washington Baltimore Newspaper Guild, are concerned that putting the onus on reporters when seasoned photographers are available could impact photographic quality. There is hope on the horizon for negotiations between the South African government and the union that has brought that country to a standstill. The 10th day of bargaining ended with a mediator putting a compromise wage increase of 7.25% on the table. The 11th day of bargaining will open with that proposal, and the government has expressed that they are willing to consider it. The government had been seeking a wage increase of 6.5%, while the union, representing hundreds of thousands of workers, had called for 10%. The unwillingness of the government to negotiate closer to labor's demand resulted in a nationwide strike. Services ranging from healthcare to transportation have been impacted by the strike. Here is today's economic report. The Economic Policy Institute recently took a look at how much impact the new minimum wage law will have on states. Thanks to the bill, 12.5 million workers will eventually see a pay increase. Wages will go from $5.15 per hour on July 24, 2007, to $5.85 per hour. Wages will continue to increase over the next 2 years. Currently, 33 states have wages above the federal. By the time the $7.25 wage is reached, only 12 will. 4 states will have wages over $8 per hour.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Just listening to that music. Just a gigolo. Welcome back to the show. I want to thank Bob Kincaid once again for coming in and talking to us, because we have great conversations, he and I. So, you know, we'll get to talk before the show sometimes, and we should record those. Put them on the air somewhere. We'll figure them out. I was listening to the WINS news there and talking about the minimum wage thing, and I just kind of shake my head about the whole thing, because $5.85 an hour, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous money. You might as well be unemployed. You might as well stay home if you're making that little bit of money, because you're not going to be making that. You know, if you're a single person trying to survive by yourself, you're not going to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, I make $9.63 an hour. And even when I work 40 hours a week, I have, just making ends meet. And sharing an apartment. I mean, I don't rent my own apartment. You certainly can't rent your own apartment at $10 an hour. Minimum wage, as far as I'm concerned, ought to be like $15, $20 an hour. That's minimum wage, as far as I'm concerned. Of course, I think about a living wage, which is a completely different thing. For those of you who aren't familiar with the definition of a living wage, the definition of a living wage is where you're making as much in 1 week as you're spending in rent for 1 month. So in other words, if I were making a living wage, I would be pulling in $650 a week, because that's what I pay for rent a month. You know, you don't include bills in that, but our bills are that huge to begin with. I pay, $100 or so a month for phone and internet combined, and it's too much probably, I know. And I pay about $25 for electricity, because I share, and about another $8 for gas. I do not have cable. I consider that kind of frivolous, and maybe when I get enough money, I might get it back. But you know something? I don't miss cable TV. I don't miss it at all. We don't even have a TV, as a matter of fact, so we don't get anything. I get so much entertainment from the internet that it really kind of doesn't matter to me anymore. But we were talking about this, and what got me started was just thinking about the conversation we were having about, you know, some of the supervisors we have at work, and I just keep trying to figure, why does everybody at the place try to make each other miserable? And you know, I lived in the South for 12 years, and they seem to thrive on that, on making everybody else miserable, because that's, you know, maybe that's the way they see it. You know, we're born in a misery, and nothing you can do to change it. And of course, anybody who tries to change it, you know, they stand in their way. And you know, you're talking about the church. The church, the Baptist church down there, was the most ardent fighter of the attempts to unionize the South, the Southern textile workers, and the other unionization efforts. The church was there against them. You know, I've seen the newsreels of you know, Bible holding women screaming at people marching or going on strike. You know, how dare you? It's again God for you to go on strike. God and company. And that's the way some people are, unfortunately. And here in Chicago, it's a different story. Chicago is the home of, Chicago has one of the origins of organized labor in this country with the Haymarket Affair, which was, there was a rally going on at a market, and somebody tossed a bomb into it, and it was a big hoo-ha. A few people got killed, and a bunch of people got accused of it that probably were innocent and got executed. But it was the beginnings part of the beginnings of the progressive movement. Chicago has a long history of progressive activism. Jane Addams, Upton Sinclair, the book The Jungle was written about the Chicago stockyards. And as bad as things are now, and they are bad, I'm not saying they're good in any way, shape, or form, but they're still better than what they were before the progressive movement started, before the labor movement in the turn of the century. Because then you had children working. Could you imagine sending your kid, 7-8-year-old kid, off to work because you can't afford to make your rent otherwise? My dad and my mom did not graduate from high school. They had to go to work to help support their families. But because, you know, my dad was part of the GI Bill and the New Deal legislation and all the stuff that progressive liberalism did for us, my dad had a union job. He worked for the city of New York, helping them to maintain the streets, worked mostly on the bridges and on the roads. And he made enough money with his one salary to support a family of five. And he was making, what, about $6.50, $7 an hour. This was in 1965, 68, something like that. And why was he able to do that was because the prices of everything else was so much lower. I think we paid maybe $80 a month for rent. Now, there's a lot of people who are making $6.50 an hour, and then you don't find anywhere where you're paying $80 a month for rent, even if you're renting a room for somebody. You know? And, you know, as a liberal, I do believe in capitalism to a certain extent, but I believe in strongly regulated capitalism. And, you know, if in the South, if you believe in any kind like that, you're just a communist, because, you know, it's perfectly all right for organized money to organize again you, but if you organize again the organized money, that's your communism. And I'm not a communist, ladies and gentlemen. I know what communism is, and I know how lousy a track record it has, and I scoff at it. It's not worthy of consideration. But what we have now is not working, and we need to fix it. And what I need to do is get the hell out of here, because it's coming on the end of the show. Wow, it really goes by quickly. You know, this hour goes by so fast, ladies and gentlemen. And oh, by the way, starting next week, I will be on an hour later. John Fox and I will be switching time slots. Basically, it's just one of those moves that makes it a little easier for everybody around. Because I have actually missed a couple of shows here because I had to work late. And this way, you know, I can get home in peace and then not have to rush and get here to get the show on time. So I'll be switching 1 hour later, and then I'll be followed by Peter Godbold, our newest host. And good luck to him. I'm looking forward to hearing his show on a regular basis. In the meantime, the Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of the Head On Radio Network. Bob Kincaid running the board out there in the great studios in West Virginia. The Cup of Joe Radio Show is being sponsored by UnreportedNews.net. Unreported News, your source, real news. And if you're just tuning in and you missed the show, you can listen to the archives on the White Rose Society, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Our good friend Ben Birch working there. Foxed Up with John Fox is next on all of your Head-On Radio Network stations. This is Joe Vecchio signing off saying, hey, 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 get back to work.
I crave a plate of Dave, open a jar of Joan. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug. With the creamer of Steve, how many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scotch. Heat up a pan of Stan. Throw in a handful of Dick. That'll do. Every trail to the carafe of mash. Upon a tray of Ray, I'll lick a spoon of Sean. Do I need to go on? I want a cup of Joe.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush meets with Senate Republicans in a few hours in a lobbying attempt to change their minds on his controversial immigration bill. The legislation faced stiff conservative opposition when Republicans blocked its movement on the Senate floor last week. Also in Washington, the Office of Special Counsel has told the White House the director of the top federal contracting agency should be punished for breaking the law forbidding government workers from conducting partisan activities on taxpayer money. Violation of the Hatch Act is not criminal, but General Services Administration Director Loretta Doan could be fired. The Palestinian territories are on the precipice of civil war. Attacks today against the office of the president and prime minister, as well as Fatah security headquarters. At least 14 Palestinians were killed yesterday. In a remote checkpoint in eastern Afghanistan, a friendly fire incident this morning between U.S. and Afghani security forces killed 7 Afghan police and wounded another 3. In the dark, the police mistook a U.S. convoy for Taliban and opened fire. American troops fired back and ordered air support. No U.S. injuries were reported. In Iraq, the third major attack on a significant transportation corridor in as many days. This morning, insurgents bombed a bridge 35 miles south of Baghdad, disabling about 60% of the span. There were no injuries. In Lebanon, 2 local Red Cross workers and 3 soldiers were killed yesterday, the most recent casualties in the 3-week siege of a Palestinian refugee camp. Lebanese forces are trying to dislodge non-Palestinian Islamic militants holed up in the camp. It's been the worst internal fighting in the country since its civil war ended 17 years ago. In The Hague, a paramilitary Serb leader was sentenced today to 35 years in prison for murdering and torturing hundreds of Croats during